Hello and welcome. Welcome to the Peace Alliance Hope Story Circle. It's so nice to see all of you. And this is also our podcast, Peace On. Peace On is your source for inspiring conversations and information from thought leaders across the spectrum on topics related to the strategies of building peace, fostering nonviolence, and creating a world that thrives, shifting our understanding toward empathy, compassion, and connection. And Peace On is brought to you by the Peace Alliance, found at peacealliance.org. And this is our weekly Hope Story Circle. We're so delighted to see you today. My name is Terry Mason. I am on the board of the Peace Alliance. And I'm joined to facilitate by Liz Gannon Graydon, who is also on our board, and Yelena Popovich, who is our Teaching Peace in Schools lead and mindfulness expert. And today we're delighted to have a special guest, Bonnie Sadi. And Bonnie is joining us from Los Angeles, where I am also. And Bonnie, I just want to welcome you. We're so delighted to have you here today. I wonder, can you unmute yourself?
Hello. Hi, Terry. Hi, everyone. I'm so, so delighted to be here with you. I am grateful for the invitation and can't wait to get the conversation started. So thank you so much.
Wonderful. I'm so glad to see you. Just one thing about you, and you have an amazing background and you'll get into some of that in your story. But one thing I just wanted to mention, which you're the CEO and one co-founder of the Wheel of Wellbeing in Los Angeles. Can you tell everyone here just a little bit about the Wheel of Wellbeing?
Sure. So Wheel of Wellbeing was founded in 2008 with me and my husband, who is a psychologist. And the premise of the center was that as a whole, as we are not just our mind or our body or our spirit, if someone is suffering, it's not just in the mind, but the whole body as a whole. So we founded Wheel of Wellbeing on that premise that we need to take care of the whole as not just as the mind. So we have different integrated modalities, psychotherapy, coaching, hypnotherapy, body work, all integrated into making that person whole.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's a fabulous facility. It's just terrific. It offers great, great modalities to people. So I'm excited to share that with anybody who might be in Los Angeles. I look it up online too. I'll post the link in a little bit. But for now, let's start with a meditation and get us grounded. Yelena, can you lead us in a meditation so we can come in together?
Hello, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. And yes, let's acquaint ourselves with a present moment. So just inviting you all to come into your body in any way that feels comfortable and needed for you in this moment. And you are welcome to just gently close your eyes or just look down. And if you wish, you can just tilt yourself a little bit off camera so that you don't feel the sense of exposure. So maybe even on the side, and just allow yourself to pause, to invite pause into this moment. And with that, allow yourself to truly inquire, what does it mean to belong to this moment? Perhaps feeling your feet on the ground allows for a sense of belonging to the earth. To knowing that touching the earth, we are connected in a profound way. Or perhaps your sense of belonging in this moment is your connection to breath. Just noticing this breath and this one. Just the sense of aliveness of each breath coming in and out of our body. Or perhaps your sense of belonging in this moment is placing your hand on your heart and feeling the aliveness that beats inside you. How do you belong to this moment in this world? And as I invite you back to the room, into the space we are in, as you gently open your eyes, look around the room, I invite you into a practice that is shared in South Africa. It's the practice of I see you. It's the greeting of Sawubona. It's I see you and I'm here. I see you. And with that, I see you, Bonnie, and I'm glad you're here. Welcome.
Bonnie, will you tell us your story?
Sure. So what is coming up for me these days is how divided we are, not just culturally, ethnically, race-based. So I think for me personally, this came up because I experienced this firsthand. When I was 13 years old, I moved to the US, not knowing the culture, definitely not knowing the language, not knowing what was I getting myself into. And at age of 13, I was extremely excited to be here and also extremely horrified. So I came to the US August, and I went to high school in September. And the first few months of me being in high school was extremely, extremely hard for me because I didn't know anyone. I didn't speak the language. So I spent most of my days observing. And I could tell, like, when I started to pick up a few English words and I could understand a little bit, I was faced with people asking me, I'm an Iranian, let's go back, I'm an Iranian-American Jewish woman that, so when I was in school and started to learn a little bit of the language, I could understand people like mocking my name. My Iranian name is Banafshe, and they would put a T at the end of it and they would call me Banafshet. And they would ask if we have homes back in Iran, or if we live in huts, or if we live in villages, or if we are camel jockeys. So all of this, I didn't know how to respond to it. I was struggling so hard to fit and belong, as Elena said, put it, and be seen, that it became super, super difficult. So I withdraw myself, and most days I would sit by myself and just observe. And what I observed was that even in America, first of all, I did not know that America is not all white. And I didn't know that Americans also can be so cruel to different groups of people that are born and raised here. So I would sit and observe and see that Asian Americans, Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, all congregating in their own groups and feeling comfortable with their groups, not yet belonging or feeling as comfortable with other groups. So my struggle and search became real. Where is my group? I so wanted to belong to a group because I wasn't yet American and I couldn't belong to that group. And so that struggle was always in back of my mind, that do we really need to belong to a group? I know that socially we look for that familiarity. We look for that comfort. We look for that security, because when we belong to a group, we feel safe. And yet at the same time, my 13-year-old, 14-year-old mind was always that, why? Why do we have to conform ourselves into this group or that group? And then that is when it becomes us against them, me against them. It's always, if you don't belong to certain group, or if you're not in this group, you're not good enough for my compassion. You're not good enough for my love. And that was always in back of my mind. And so that was my early years of high school. And I remember people telling me that you need to, as a young girl, as someone that doesn't know the city, you certainly need to stay away from certain neighborhoods and certain people because they're not safe. And that for me was a shocking realization, that why aren't you all Americans, and why is it that some groups are not safe and some groups are? And to make that story very short, I was lost in Queens one day, and I found myself in a Black neighborhood, and the only one that saved me and took me back home was a Black person that, even though we didn't know the language, and the language was definitely a barrier, I felt safe and I surrendered. And I said, I'm not gonna buy into that belief that this man is gonna hurt me. So he was actually my first friend in the United States. I never saw him again. And I never spoke with him again. But that day, I made sure that in my mind, I'm not gonna judge people based upon the color of their skin or where they come from or what language they speak. Fast forward a few years, we moved from New York to California. And when my boys were about 12 and 13, they would always go to a park nearby our house and play basketball. And I would pick them up. It was a 5-minute ride. So one day my son called me and said, Mom, can you pick us up? We're done. I said, sure. And then as soon as he hung up, he called me back again. And he said, Mom, can I bring my friend over? I said, sure. Then he hung up again. And then he called back again. I said, what? He goes, Mom, he wants you to know that he is Black. I was like, okay, why is he telling me that? He goes, I don't know. He just said, call and say I'm Black. And that moment, I realized that, oh my God, this is so real for so many people, for so many Black people, even as a 13-year-old. And then it dawned on me that I was 13 when I moved to this country. And the feelings of rejection, not being seen, not fitting in, and struggling to say, hey, I'm here, I'm not a bad person, see me, as Elena said, that all of that feeling came up for me. So that day, Darius came over, the boys had a great time, and he felt safe that he came back almost every day, and they played, they did their homework together. So one day when I was comfortable enough with him, and I felt that he is safe with feels safe with me as well, I said, Darius, what was that all about? Why did you need to tell me that you were Black? And he goes, because most Iranian moms don't want their kids to hang out with Black kids. That broke my heart so deeply that I remember just sitting in, on the kitchen counter, and I was like, what is happening? What is going on? This 13-year-old boy, the innocence in him, why does he need to be treated so differently because his skin is shades darker than ours? And that is when I came back to the feeling of fitting into a box or into a group. I so wanted to get myself distanced from my group because I was ashamed. I wanted to have nothing to do with that group that discriminated against a certain group of people just because of an idea, just because of a limiting belief that they had, just because we tend to generalize and say, okay, because usually generalization, when we put people in stereotyping and into different group, it's the shortcut to our comfort zone. We feel more safe because this group looks like me, talks like me, eats like me. So it was then that I said, you know what? Why do I need to fit into a box? I'm going to become the sheep of the Black sheep of the community and not belong to a box. And I, in my head, I decided to have a circle instead and welcome whoever that feels safe and comfortable to be with me. And the fact that we want to be in a group, I wanted to have nothing to do with that. Now, that realization, as eye-opening as it was like, okay, now this is the beginning. What do we do now? Fast forward 20 years later, my boys are still friends with Darius, by the way. they hang out together and they have a great time together. 20 years later, in 2020, we still are struggling with the same issue. Cultural bias, discrimination, all of that is front and center and very, very alive. So what do we do? How do we overcome this? And I think for most of us, even the ones that we think we're not biased in any way, we are biased in some ways. My invitation to everyone is here is to really look deep inside and see where our biases are from. Because the first step into healing is acknowledging that we do ourselves have some kind of a biases. And after we recognize, I mean, this is a challenging invitation because we usually are not comfortable with getting in touch with our deepest secrets of our inner self. And when we are vulnerable and when we are raw and when we are willing to dig deep within ourselves, that is when we start the healing process. And my second invitation to you all is, to myself as well, is to get outside of our boxes, to be willing to get uncomfortable, to get uncomfortable so that we get to know different cultures, we experience different foods, we consciously connect to other people that are not like us. Because when we get to know people on a soul level, there is no way that we can judge them. There is no way that we can say they are good or bad, right or wrong. Because we all want to come from that compassionate heart that we all have. So my invitation is to come from the heart, and we all need that connection. We all need to expand our horizon. We all need to feel one. Not that the differences are not there. The differences are actually what makes us great, what makes the rainbow colorful. Even though we are all equal, accepting our differences and not coming from judgment, I think that's the first step to healing and to be able to be seen and to be heard. So that's my story.
Thank you, Bonnie. That was lovely. Thank you. Powerful. Yelena, would you like to frame the inquiry that will send people to share their own stories with?
Yeah, thank you, Terry. Thank you, Bonnie. That resonated on so many different levels for me personally, professionally, and just on a human level.
Thank you.
It bears to me, you know, that what does it mean to be clearly seen and clearly see our own selves? You know, respect actually comes from a Latin word that means to see clearly. To respect, you know, to respect ourselves and to respect others, it's to clearly see. So I think the invitation for us is, how do we practice that? How do you practice clearly seeing and respecting others for who they are and clearly seeing yourself and unveiling that things that you don't see clearly? How do you get support on these, practicing these ways of implicit bias that are very alive for each one of us? What are the spaces? What are the supports? How open are you to clearly see things that you don't necessarily see? So that's the invitation. I don't know if you captured that, Terry, but thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we will just break out in these small groups. And just as always, the invitation is to listen with the heart, listen to the story being told. While listening, trying to not make up your own stories about what you're listening, but truly listen to that story. And speaking from your story, speaking from your heart, speaking from your experience. And trusting that you will know what to say when your time comes, not rehearsing your story while listening. And the confidentiality piece, that what we share kind of stays there. And when we come back, we share how that landed for us. What is the experience that we had with that story of others? So those are some of the invitations. And just say enough. so that everybody there has an opportunity to share. And if you're not feel sharing today, maybe you can just offer a gift of listening. So I think that's the invitation. Thank you all for your consideration.
Wonderful. So I'm going to pause the recording and then we'll go into breakout rooms and then come back. Well, welcome back, everyone. It's nice to see you again. Who would like to share something that's alive for you now after you've had that time in your breakout room? You can unmute yourself and speak.
Hi, I'll share. Our discussion was quite interesting. I mean, we spoke from the personal, and then we also spoke about our perceptions of the larger picture, both what we see and how we relate in the world, but also how we see others around us relating too. And I found that, each one of us, has our own very different perspective. And it was wonderful to see the differences, but yet also the commonalities, and to experience how someone else, perhaps from a very, different background and a different generation, could then have ideas and feelings very similar to my own. And one thing that I talked about was, because I know I'm a flawed human being. I mean, to me, that's just part of being a human, I guess. There was a book that I saw years ago, and I wish I could remember who wrote it. It was a Buddhist teacher, but the title of the book was Stumbling Towards Enlightenment. And that's kind of how I see going through life. It's that, we're just taking it step by step, and sometimes we stumble, but yet, hopefully we get up and move on, and hopefully the aim or the trajectory is to become, a little bit more evolved or a little bit kinder or whatever we want to be as a person. So thank you
Lois. Stumbling toward enlightenment. I think I've heard of it.
I like that.
Who else would like to share? Kate, you can unmute yourself.
Good morning all. It's always lovely to see you. I was in the group with Lois, and so I want to speak a little bit about what I was talking about, but also connect it back to Bonnie with your original talk this morning, because what surfaced for me, which was such a beautiful share, thank you so much. What struck me, Bonnie, about your story in connection with this larger conversation was the fact that I think for many Americans who do not fit into, and Lois talked about this, the white Anglo-Saxon perspective, right? What we consider to be the traditional American, for lack of a more cruel term, right? But we have opened our doors and we have opened our country to welcome all. But that has been a flawed promise, right? So when people arrive who do not fit into the arbitrary norm that America has established for ourselves, we have groups of individuals who have absorbed trauma. And they have absorbed trauma from where they're coming from, and they've absorbed trauma while being in this country. And Bonnie, what struck me about your story was that I think the choice that you made to look outside of your cultural trauma and see the connection, see the similarity, see the shared humanity in another's. And what a healing bridge that choice was, because it allows us not to marinate in our traumas, right? But see the shared humanity. And because we have that connection, now we're actually working toward the healing. But the healing comes from a level of shared humanity across an entire range. So it's not just that we're sitting, you know, it's not just that one culture is sitting and focusing on what's traumatizing them. And that kind of stymies the larger progress for humanity. It's when we see each other, when we see ourselves and other human beings, and we recognize your pain is similar to my pain, even though it may be different, but I can connect and appreciate and give you compassion because I see myself in you. And that's what I'm going to be taking away from this morning and from your conversation, Bonnie. So I just wanted to share that with the group. I know it feels a little muddy to me as I'm saying it. I hope that it sounds a little clearer when I'm bringing it to all of you, but that's what I wanted to bring up.
It was very clear to me. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sherry, thank you.
Who else would like to share?
Great. Is if you, the leader,
say, Deborah?
Yes.
Wonderful.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I was in a group with Ida and Achu. I hope I'm saying it correctly. And what you just said, Kate, really was true for our group, because Achu shared trauma that is happening right today, where children have been butchered and the government is part of the problem, because you can't speak out about the government in Cameroon. And so, you know, it was so heart-wrenching, you know, to hear his experience. And I remembered what Alina said, to not, you know, prepare what you were going to say. I just could only relate on the level that what's happened in Africa is really, you know, a symptom of colonization. You know, I've lived in Africa and I love Africa. I love Africans. And I want the best for him and his people. And I wanted to know why the United Nations wasn't there helping him. And I wanted to know why the world isn't, you know, standing up and helping them. And then I think about our own country and how I don't feel that, you know, we have a democracy right now. And, you know, that maybe, you know, we're a few steps away from what's happening in Cameroon. I want to thank you all for listening. Achu is here, and he's a very gracious human being. And he says the only help he has is God. And I would hope that it could even be, you know, something more than that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Deborah. And thank you, Achu. We probably have time for one more share if someone has something they want to bring forward before we close the call.
I want to share the word vulnerability, because it seems that in a disaster such as a hurricane or a wildfire, we let our defenses down. And it's at that point that we begin to see other people and ourselves more clearly, with more respect, because our survival depends on it. You know, that's all I got.
Vulnerability. That's really how we all become open to see one another, isn't it? Is by being vulnerable. Well, we'll bring this call to a close. I'm pasting some links in the chat. We have a new one. The first is to the Peace Alliance, which is our website. Peace Alliance empowers civic action for a culture of peace. The second one is to our Peace on Podcasts. This will be a podcast. All of our calls are podcasts. The next is a new one. We have a new initiative that just launched this week to condemn election violence. there's been a threat of violence surfacing around the election, and we have an action that you can take. You click on that link, you'll read about that, and you can take that action to notify your elected officials and just sign on as yourself to condemn any election violence coming out of our upcoming election. Also, the Blueprint for Peace, it's an initiative that we've had going for several months. We're continuing to have it grow. And it's basically an initiative to let your elected officials know that you support policy priorities around peace building and violence reduction surrounding our five cornerstones of peace. We are also a nonprofit. We gratefully welcome any donations. We especially love to get monthly donors, even small amounts, because that gives us sustainable income. And then last is the calendar of events. Our Hope Story Circles are on the calendar events, also our monthly action calls and Department of Peace Building calls. So you can check out the calendar of events for other things to join us and be a part of. So with that, I'm going to hand it back to Liz to wrap up the call for us. Very grateful for all of you being here.
Yeah, I want to thank everyone who came to the call. I want to always acknowledge Terry and Yelena, my beautiful partners in this, and Bonnie for your really beautiful, thoughtful story. And what it brought to me was, I was born in Queens, New York, which is one of the most diverse, you know, places in our country. I moved away, but the second I could, as an adult, move back, I spent most of my adult life in Queens. And I was a teacher, I was a middle school teacher. And in a 33-year career as a teacher, I've cultivated relationships to the point where I'm still very close to a lot of my students. And when people comment about that, I can point to an exact moment, I think. Now, we're all the product of a lot of experiences, but I can point to an exact moment that I think broke me open to that idea of what Bonnie talked about was seeing. When I was in high school, my favorite class was Spanish, and I was in a Spanish literature class. And my beautiful teacher introduced us to a story. It was a short story written by an Argentinian writer named Jorge Luis Borges. I don't know if any of you have ever read Borges. And it was a story in a collection of short stories called Fictions, Ficciones. And it was called Funes el Memorioso. Funes was the man's name. I see Yelena nodding. The Memorious. And the premise of the short story is, as a young man, I think he's about 19, he falls off a horse and he hits his head. And he loses the ability to extrapolate and generalize, right? So the way they describe it was, when he sees a dog, each dog he sees is completely unique to him, that he can't call them by the same name. So he has to invent a name for each dog he sees. And when he sees each tree, he sees them with such clarity that he can't just generalize and call them all trees. He sees them so individually that in his mind, he comes up with an individual name for each tree and then each leaf on each tree. And the leaf when they're blowing this way as opposed to when they're blowing this way, right? And the story goes on, kind of he drives himself crazy. And I think the point of the story was that we're supposed to learn how to generalize and extrapolate to stay sane. But as I often did in school, I think I took the exact opposite lesson. And I thought, imagine if we saw each other that clearly, right? Imagine if we took the time. So I remember the first time I stepped in a classroom, this isn't my sixth grade class. This is Amy and this is Jen and this, you know, and I really tried to see people with such individual clarity that I would never forget them. And I think I hadn't thought about that story in a while, Bonnie, until you talked about what it took to see. And I think sometimes it's just on purpose awakening that, and it's, I developed it as a skill set, right? I would come up with mnemonic devices or ways I remembered them, but that idea of cultivating on purpose, that ability to see one another, that allows us to feel connected in a really powerful way. So I want to thank you again, Bonnie, for kind of bringing that awareness back to the forefront. And as we go off, I want us to kind of, I invite us to walk through our week with that idea about how can we kind of practice and cultivate really seeing with that clarity and with that depth of vision so that we can feel more interconnected with one another, right? And so, as Bonnie said, yes, we kind of understand we belong in groups and we have things that are the same, but if we could reach past them to, right, really seeing, one another. I think that's such a beautiful kind of powerful exercise that I know has enriched my own life and relationships. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Please unmute yourself and say goodbye. Thank you so much for being here.
Such a wonderful morning. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today at Peace On. We hope that it inspires you to engage in dialogue in your larger community. Peace On is your source for inspiring conversations and information from thought leaders across the spectrum on topics related to the strategies of building peace, fostering nonviolence, and creating a world that thrives, shifting our understanding toward empathy, compassion, and connection. Peace On is brought to you by the Peace Alliance, found at peacealliance.org. Okay.